listening to Wellness Wednesday, a show about health and wellness in the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta. This week, excellent health with the Yukon-Kuskokwim Health Corporation.
Thank you for listening to Excellent Health with the Yukon-Kuskokwim Health Corporation. On this show, we'll be speaking with medical experts from YKHC about health-related topics that you can use to keep yourself and your loved ones in excellent health. Uli Chalgo, I'm Nikolai Joke from YKHC, Koyana Ilagaluta. Flooding has become a regular occurrence in the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta, especially in the fall and springtime. We're coming up on spring breakup on the Kuskokwim River here in Bethel, but I'd like to make sure that we can share this any time of the year when we want people to listen to the dangers of floodwater and how to mitigate mold in our homes after they get flooded. I'm joined today by YKHC's Chief of Staff, Dr. Ellen Hodges. Always a pleasure to have you on the show, as well as Brian Lefferts, who serves as Director of Public Health. Koyana, for joining me. You both are regular guests on the show, but let's go ahead and have you take turns introducing yourselves, who you are, where you're from, and how long you've served in your role at YKHC.
Sure. Well, hello, everybody. I'm Dr. Ellen Hodges. I've been at YKHC for about 22 years, in my current role, about 15 or 16 years as the chief of staff. I'm originally from Minnesota.
Hi, Brian Lefferts, Director of Public Health, and I started with YKHC in 2005, so it's just a little over 20 years.
That's awesome.
And then in 2010, I became the Director of Environmental Health and Engineering, which does a lot of flood-related response, and in 2020, became the Director of Public Health. And public health, for people that don't know, is what we do collectively to create conditions where people can be healthy. So excited to talk about what we can all do individually and then together to help prepare and be safe during some floods, because it's a part of reality for all of us in the YK Delta.
Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. I appreciate that. Thank you both for sharing. All right, so let's lay some groundwork for our show. There's always a danger of flooding when our river ice breaks up and begins to flow down into the ocean, but we've also experienced some unusual storm activity recently, most notably Typhoon Merbok in 2022 and Typhoon Halong in 2025. In addition to the devastation that floodwaters can cause in our communities, there are also risks for catching sicknesses from floodwaters, correct, Brian?
Yeah. So just think about, just imagine what's on the ground outside your house right now, or laying around in your community. And you can think about, there's animals, poop in the woods. We have keep our drums of gas or fuel kind of on the ground, or maybe even vehicles that have gas in them. All this stuff just sort of sits on the ground and it's fine most of the year. But when the floodwaters come up, whether it be like in the spring with breakup, or when we have, storm floods, like in the fall, when the water rises, all of that stuff gets redistributed all over.
I don't even think about that. I guess. I didn't think about that when I was a kid too,
Yeah.
And then so, depending on how high it is, you also have the sewage lagoon in the community,
So all of this stuff gets moved around and mixed up like a big mixing bowl, and then just even when the flood water recedes in, it's all just everything is kind of contaminated with a mixture of both chemical and biological crud that can get you sick.
Yeah, thanks for that. And Dr. Hodges, how do these germs and bacteria in the floodwater affect the human body?
Sure, absolutely. There's a lot of diseases that are spread. We call it the fecal-oral route, meaning from human feces, and they can be ingested orally or through breathing in contaminated air that can make people unwell. So there's our usual colon bacteria, E. coli, which lives in our colon. It's normal and healthy in our colon, but can cause you to become unwell. The hepatitis viruses, A, B, and C, and there's a hepatitis D. Many of us...
Oh, there's a D.
There is a D.
Huh, I didn't know that.
Yes. It's kind of rare, but it does happen, and often in conjunction with B, but that's a different story. A whole different show on hepatitis, perhaps.
Yeah, we'll have to keep that in mind.
Many of us are vaccinated against hepatitis A and B, and just a quick plug here, please update your vaccines. I can't have a show by without
Thank
me talking about
yes,
vaccinations.
For sure.
But there is no vaccine for C, and a lot of this can be spread through this route and can make people feel quite unwell. So there's lots of types of bacteria that live in and viruses that live in wastewater and floodwaters that can make you unwell.
And what is there a cure for hepatitis C if you happen to catch
yes,
it?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, good.
Yeah, we'll do
That's
a whole
good.
Show. We'll do a whole show on hepatitis C. It'll be great.
And when you're cleaning up, there's often a lot of things got moved around too that are like sharp objects. And
oh, yeah.
I think sometimes we think of tetanus.
Yep.
Oh,
yeah,
thing you yeah can, for sure.
Tetanus, or just regular infections. So
yeah.
MRSA, so the methicillin-resistant Staph aureus, and the other skin infections that are that we often commonly get when there isn't flood water. If we have small breaks in our skin from cleaning up damage, we can get infections from those kinds of things. So lots of things like that.
Yeah, good things to keep in mind. So what kinds of precautions should people take to prevent being infected by these germs and bacteria?
Yeah, so just remember, like, almost everything that's touched floodwater is dirty. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, as you start cleaning up, keep that in mind. Protect yourself by wearing gloves, maybe a mask. And then most importantly, probably, is stay out of the floodwater itself.
Yeah.
So if there's still puddles and things around, kids especially like mm-hmm. to play in puddles.
Yeah.
And these puddles often contain all that gunk that we talked about that can get those kids sick.
Mm-hmm.
So try as much as you can to keep people out of
that's
the flood
hard.
Water.
I grew up in Nabuskak and we had floods and we played in that water.
Yep.
I didn't think
all
about
the time,
you know, the sicknesses and stuff. So now that I think back, I'm like, oh man, that was not good.
Maybe not good, yeah.
Yeah. When you're done cleaning up, try to, if you can, wash your hands with warm soap and water. Now, not everybody has running water, so you know, a wash basin with clean water that you know came from a clean source, not flood water. And then use soap and water, and maybe even especially if you don't have running water, a mixture of bleach in there to disinfect afterwards.
Speaking of which, you know, a lot of our communities have wells, and so what do we do if our water source happens to be contaminated?
Yeah, great question. So the public water system occasionally gets contaminated,
mm-hmm.
and the water plant operator in your community will notify people if that's something you should be concerned about. So the floodwaters can come up, and depending on where your well is at, the top, if the floodwaters go over the top of the well head, then it could be a problem. If not, then it's safe. They're sealed all the way up to the top of this well head. And sometimes those well heads are many, many feet above ground. So we don't have to worry about it. But the water plant operator will tell you if your well was potentially contaminated or not. And there's a way for us to work with the water plant operator to get those treated, to disinfect that so that they can start making clean drinking water again pretty quickly, usually within a couple of days. That water still gets treated, filtered, and disinfected. So even if that happened, a lot of times the water from the water treatment plant is still the safest water in town. But if that's the case, they'll tell you it's on a boil water notice. So that's in that situation, you're going to look for your local community water plant operator and say, is my water on boil water notice? And if it is, boil your water. And
how long for?
We recommend to bring it to a rolling boil. So, you know, you start to see the little bubbles. That's not a rolling boil.
It's a
when
simmer.
Yeah. It's when those bubbles are like really flying up super fast, and it's rolling like a really fast moving river on the top, and you want to let that happen for a couple minutes, and then you'll know the water is safe. As we test that water, then we'll test that water, and we'll work with the water plant operator to test it and disinfect it, and then they'll let you know when that's cleared and safe to drink again. If you have a community well, or I mean an individual well, so a lot of people have one that just is for their house, or maybe
mm-hmm.
their house and their neighbor's house. There's a lot of instruction. We can help you disinfect that too. And we don't, just like with the community system, don't drink that water. Bring it to a rolling boil first. And then you should just call us because we'll want to give you detailed instructions.
Number?
It's 543-6420. If you can't remember that, you can call the hotline and ask for OEH or OEHE or environmental health. And it's all the same place. It's just
and
different.
The hotline is 543-6000, the yep. general, the general
yep. call us, number. Yeah, ask for the environmental health office, and that sometimes we call, go by OEH. And or just get a hold of public relations and they'll forward
yeah,
it to
for
us
sure.
too.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we'd like to give you special instructions on how to disinfect your well then.
That's all good things to know. How about if our our food gets contaminated, like the some of the stuff that's in packaging and things like that that happened to be on the floor and floodwaters came in, what kinds of things should we think about doing?
Yeah, food that got touches floodwater should just be thrown out. There's a really easy to remember saying, when in doubt, throw it out. Mm-hmm. And that's tough to do. I know people work really hard to collect their food, and oftentimes it's something that was shared with them or prepared with their family members, and so it's hard, but we don't want to get sick from it. So if it touches floodwater, throw it out. Another common thing that happens is people lose power.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. When there's floodwaters, and so sometimes your refrigerator could be dead for not keeping your food cold, or your freezer. And again, if it gets warm, unfortunately, you need to throw that food out.
Yeah. About 4 hours. So if it's warm, gets warm enough, and it's warm. Okay, so sometimes your freezer or refrigerator will stay cold, right? Because
yep.
it'll stay cold for a while. But if it
yeah.
gets
as long as you don't keep it open,
keep
or
it open
it,
or open, keep opening it yeah. up. But if it gets warm, we want to use that 4 hour limit and just discard things.
Yeah, and if you're gone and not sure, it's safest to throw it out, and then, that way you don't get sick.
Yeah, for sure. I appreciate all that. So, what kinds of things can families do right now to be prepared for a flood?
Yeah, good question. So when floodwaters go out, a couple things could happen. You might have to leave your home. Your home, maybe you could stay, but you might not have power. And if you leave your home, to prepare for that, some of the things, you know, it might be in the middle of the night, and you might have no time to prepare. So mm-hmm. before the flood, we recommend people get a little kit together of emergency supplies. And so important things to think of when putting those together is, what will I need in the next 3 days to get me by if I can only live off of what's in this small bag?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then put it by the door. So emergency clothes, battery-powered flashlights and radios, maybe sleeping bags, stuff if you have baby or children, any special items they might need.
Oh, that's a good thing to keep in mind.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. A formula? Diapers,
yep.
wipes,
all yep. of those expensive things.
Yeah.
The things you need to stay to live for 3 days. If you gotta quickly leave in the middle of the night, or even during the day when the floodwaters are rising rapidly.
That's a good baseline to have, 3 days.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So, how about Dr. Hodges? Are there any medically necessary things that we should have in this? In
absolutely.
Kit?
So we want people to keep in mind their prescription medications. So keep those in a place where it's easy to grab them and put them in your bag when you leave. Common over-the-counter medications for aches and pains, Tylenol, ibuprofen, stomach discomfort medications, things like that. Anything that you would normally take, bring those with you. Some people are going to have medical devices that we want you to take with
yeah.
you, like CPAP or BiPAP. If you need that for sleeping, we're going to want you to grab that and bring that with you. So anything that you would need on a day-to-day basis for your health. I know sometimes that's not possible, and I know, like, especially for our most recent typhoon, Halong, a lot of people had their medications and devices destroyed, and we're always happy to help, but it's easier for you and less stressful, I think, if you can get all those things with you. Evacuate with them.
So related to that, sometimes those medical devices are large and bulky mm-hmm. and difficult to move around, and sometimes people just have a hard time themselves moving around and mm-hmm. maybe getting up to the school or wherever your local community shelter is. And so if you're in a situation like that where you think in an emergency you might need some help to get up to that emergency evacuation shelter in your community, let your health aide know, or and also let your tribal council administrator know, or whoever's in charge of that emergency evacuation. One thing YKHC does every year to help us prepare is try to make a list of people who are medically fragile or who have just have a hard time getting around.
That's a good thing to keep in mind.
If like in the middle of the night this happens, the TC or whoever's going to help in your local community get people to a safe place to be. They need to have that list of who's in town and who might need help.
Yeah.
That's great. All right. So, Brian, are there things that we should do to get our homes ready for a potential flood?
Sure. Yeah. Again, you know, one of the first things to think about, remember, we started off by saying when there's a flood, it just picks everything up and mixes it all up and leaves it on the ground. And that's like fuel, anything we have laying on the ground. So if you don't want that to happen, now's the time to pick that stuff up. So we recommend, you know, like if you have fuel cans, set them up on a high spot, higher location. If you have boats or snow machines or anything you don't want to drift away, tie that stuff down, fuel, wood, whatever. Within the house, pick if it looks like floodwaters might come up pretty high, like things that might absorb water that could later grow mold, like carpets, clothing, all that kind of stuff. Try to you know, pick anything that you don't want to touch floodwater up ahead of the flood and put it into a higher location.
That's great. And things like electrical appliances and
Especially freezers, those can float away. But anything that's plugged in, you know, you might want to consider unplugging it. I wouldn't necessarily unplug my fridge or freezer unless I really thought that maybe there'd be some long-term power outages and I might want to protect that equipment or whoever. Another thing after the floods is if the houses do move around, it can be unsafe for electrical outlets to be plugged into something that's energized, and if there is power to the house and there's floodwaters in the house, that can be dangerous too. So maybe unplug stuff that doesn't need to be plugged in.
And speaking of power and things that are plugged in, what are some other things that we should keep in mind as we're moving around in the village and trying to prepare, and you know that the flood is happening, what are some of those things that we should keep in mind?
In real extreme events, sometimes the power lines can get downed. You know, whether it's a storm that brings in floodwaters and it's just strong enough. We saw this with Halong, where it just knocked power lines down. Or sometimes in the spring when there's breakup, those we've seen where large
chunks of ice
can knock power loose. But if you see a down power line, that's a really dangerous thing. So stay away from those and notify your local power company that's there so they can safely address that. You know, again, like with your appliances, if they're got or furniture or anything that got contaminated with floodwater, it's possible to sometimes clean those out, but a lot of times they just need to be thrown away.
Yeah.
All right. So that's great information. And Dr. Hodges, when we're faced with flood and we need to get to different places during the emergency, what are some of the things that we need to keep in mind?
Well, I've talked a little bit about hypothermia, and I think Brian also hit on this. Stay out of the flood water. The water around here is very cold year round, and people will get cold. They'll get hypothermic. There's different stages of hypothermia. There's kind of the stages where you're just a little bit cold and starting to shiver, but hypothermia can rapidly become very dangerous, especially if you're cold and wet. Some of the coldest, I mean, people think about hypothermia a lot when it's super cold, like it was a couple of weeks ago, but honestly, the biggest danger is when you're cold and wet. As you evaporate the heat out of your body really rapidly, you can become dangerously cold. And some of the symptoms of early hypothermia are hard to pick up on because they can be confusion and not having being mentally clear.
So if we could step back for just a minute, that initial shivering, that's your body's natural response to trying to get
trying
warm,
to get
correct?
You warmed up. Yeah.
So
it's a pretty good response, actually. And
yeah,
it will warm you
for
up.
Sure.
If you can get into warm, dry clothes and get into a warm place, you know, really rapidly. But if you can't, then you could potentially progress on. So the main thing is to get out of your wet clothes and into a a warm place as fast as you can, especially if you're outside and you're wet. That's a pretty dangerous thing to be. But again, the main thing is prevention here. We really want people not to get into the flood water. We want people to get cold and wet to begin with. And as soon as you notice that you are, or you notice that somebody else is, and they may not be able to know this themselves if they're starting to get confused.
That's the scary part.
Yeah, it can be pretty subtle, and people start making kind of bad decisions, almost like they're drunk. And some of the people that I've seen who have terrible hypothermia, people have been mistaken for being intoxicated with alcohol, and in fact, they're just cold. It's a very similar symptom.
Some people do, like, they see things that aren't there.
They hallucinate.
Yeah, they hallucinate, and they hear things.
They hear things that aren't there. Sometimes they'll think they're warm, so they'll start taking all of their clothing off.
I've heard of that. Yeah, that's really scary.
Yeah. So it's something we want to prevent. Prevention's, ounce of prevention's a pound of cure here. So stay out of the flood water. Try to stay warm. Try to stay dry if you can. And if you get wet or cold, get inside. Get that wet clothes off as soon as possible.
You know, when we were growing up in school in Nabuskak, they'd invite elders in once in a while, and they'd, we'd sit there and we'd listen to them talk about things, especially during times when the season's changing. And so they talk about, one of the things that they talked about was when you're out hunting or doing subsistence activities and you fall into cold water, they said, to take your clothes off and wring them out. And then if you didn't have extra clothes, to get some grass and stuff those in your clothes, and so that it acts as insulation between your damp clothing and your skin.
Yep.
So those are things that I always remember because, they told us this, as we're growing up year after year. And I think as a kid, like, here we go again. They're going to tell us these things.
Yep.
But now that I'm older, I'm like, oh, now I see why.
Yeah, repetition is the key there. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Getting warm and dry any way that you can. And I always tell people when you travel on your snowgo or your ATV to have a change of clothes for this very reason, especially a base layer, because if you can get that base layer on and be dry.
Awesome. So let's switch gears now and talk about what to do after a flood. Let's say I came home to find that the floodwaters entered my home. What do I do now?
You're going to need to before you start cleaning up, let the floodwaters recede. one of the things we need to do is eliminate any source of moisture. So if you start cleaning up and then the floodwaters can just get right back in, you're going to be repeating the process over and over. So eliminate that source of moisture. Then you're going to want to start cleaning up. So sometimes the floodwaters, like we keep saying, like, brings debris and mud and silt and dirt. It's going to, when you have all that stuff, it's going to make it difficult to disinfect later. So clean the area, dry it out. Eliminate that source of moisture, clean the area as much as you can, and then you're going to have to disinfect. So if things are wet or got wet, they can start growing mold. So, anything that can't be easily dried and disinfected, like insulation and drywall or some furniture, might need to be thrown out. Eliminate that source, clean what you can. What you can't throw out again, disinfect, and then we recommend like a bleach solution. And so you'll disinfect that, let that dry again completely, and then you can start rebuilding.
Yeah, that bleach solution I've seen in some of the literature that you guys printed out was a mixture of 1 cup of bleach to every 5 gallons of water.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so clean it with water, maybe even better soapy water, rinse that off, get it very clean, then disinfect. If you have a lot of dirt and stuff still, the disinfectant doesn't work as well.
Mm-hmm.
It's harder to kill the mold. And then let that dry out again. Mold needs a source of food, so wood or porous materials, drywall. It needs moisture. So that's why and then it's got to have a little bit of mold to start growing. So we're going to try to dry it out, clean it up, and disinfect to prevent all that.
And Dr. Hodges, what are some of the dangers of mold growth in our homes?
Yeah, so especially when it's important to remember that this can start growing within 24 to 48 hours. This is not like a long term, like a later in, like a month later problem. This is going to happen quickly and can happen rapidly. So it can be a quick thing. And it can affect your health adversely in many ways. So mold, especially in people who are sensitive to mold. So think of patients who have asthma or lung problems to start with, chronic lung disease. Think of our elderly and our young. So the very old and the very young are more susceptible to these kinds of things. We're going to get some the first thing might be sinus problems like runny nose, sinus congestion, things like that. Some people can get problems with if you inhale the spores. People can get respiratory symptoms, so coughing and feeling and difficulty breathing, things like that. So those are kind of some of the common things with mold. And again, here an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. So what Brian was talking about is trying to eliminate the sources of mold in your home before they start. And this has to be done, like I said, pretty rapidly because it can get there. And if you're cleaning up mold, make sure you wear a mask. We'd want you to wear a mask to prevent from an inhalation of those spores into your nasal cavities or into your lungs.
And this is a lot to remember. So YKHC over the years has put together flood cleanup health and safety kits and then information packets. So if your home does have flooding and you're worried about mold, we can't come out and clean it for you, but we have little 5-gallon buckets with some of the essentials that you'll need.
That's cool.
Trash bags. Scrub brushes, a little bit of powder bleach so you can make your own. You can use the bucket that we send you with all the supplies in it to mix that bleach in. A fan, a little box fan so you can use it to try to dry things out. And then probably most importantly, a packet, information packet. And in that's got all the things that we talked about today with plus lots more. And there is also some phone numbers you can call us to get some more advice. So reach out to your tribal administrator. If there's lots of homes in your community, we want to work with the tribal administrator to get lots of packets and information out. Mm-hmm. Maybe send an environmental health specialist to your community to provide some education. And then work with them to find a location to distribute all these this information and these kits. If it's smaller scale and maybe your community doesn't have an organized way to distribute all that, you can call the Office of Environmental Health and we can help arrange to get something like that shipped out to you.
That's awesome. So we covered a lot of ground during our talk today, and thank you both for sharing all of that information. So to end the show, I want to know three things you want our listeners to remember from our show today. And we'll start with Brian.
Okay. So number one, we want you to be prepared. So get those kits ahead of time and be prepared in the case of an emergency. Two, remember that floodwater can be hazardous, and so stay out of it and keep your kids out of it afterwards. And then three, if you have an emergency or if your home was impacted by flooding, then use the information packets that we have to help you clean up in a safe way.
Thanks, Brian. And then Dr. Hodges, what are your three things?
I would say make sure you get your prescription medications. we can always replace them, but that takes time. And I know some people need to take those on a daily basis. So very important to have your prescription medications all lined up and your medical devices. So if you need a medical device and it's portable, make sure you have that. And Brian mentioned my second thing, which is if you live with a medically fragile elder or you yourself are a medically fragile elder, make sure your tribal council is aware so they can help you and assist you in times like that. And lastly, avoid that mold. Try to get rid of it as soon as you can and try to prevent it in the methods that Brian described with disinfection. We really want to keep people's homes free from this because it can adversely impact your health.
Thank you both for joining me today, and Koyana to everyone who's listening. I'm Nikolai Joke, and this is Excellent Health with the Yukon-Kuskokwim Health Corporation.
Thank you for listening to Wellness Wednesday, a show about health and wellness in the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta. Listen online at kyuk.org or tune in live every Wednesday at 10 a.m. right here on KYUK.